second part then of this introduction to the history of India. And we were somewhere around 1930. 1930 is also, or 1931 maybe, is the time that Gandhi visited Britain. And having some really quite interesting pictures here. 1931, Gandhi visits in England. At the top, you see him in London. And so at this point, he has taken on this idea that you dress in clothes you have made yourself. This shocked the people very much at the time, and in particular Winston Churchill, who at this time was quite an isolated and marginal conservative figure, detested Gandhi, absolutely detested him, and wrote some very racist things about him. Fortunately for Winston Churchill, he later had a new role which nobody was expecting in the Second World War, and that's what everybody remembers. If Winston Churchill had died in 1936, he would have had a very, very bad reputation indeed. So he went to negotiate with the British Empire. Came out of prison and went to negotiate with the British Empire, dressed as an Indian. So symbolically, in the newspapers around the world, this was a big thing, you know. Oh, just little Indian with Indian clothes he made himself. But he also went around India and England. And this is an absolutely fascinating photograph, because when he organized the boycott of Indian cloth, he understood that this meant that a lot of textile workers in England could lose their jobs. Yeah, that it could be a difficult thing. So when he went to England, he went to visit the textile workers in the north of England, which was like almost everybody. All of my grandparents worked in the textile industry. It was textile land, you know. And so he went to apologise to them for having caused difficulty by boycotting British cloth. And as you can see, he got the most incredible reception from the textile workers. One absolutely beautiful photograph. I think they just adopted this guy from the other side of the world with his philosophy. Two more interventions of Gandhi in the 30s. He went on a fast again. He refused to eat because the new constitution suggested by the British involved more elections, because they understood, you know, they needed to give a little bit of democracy. But they decided to have separate elections for the Dalit. In fact, I should use the modern word Dalit, because the untouchables is that horrible word which was used at the time. And then in 1934, he announces again his retirement from politics to concentrate on village economics. And he will be for 20, 30 years, he will be retiring from politics, then coming back, then retiring from politics, then coming back. Although it is very interesting to see that in a few years' time, as you'll see in a moment, when India became independent, if Gandhi had wanted to be president, he would be president. He was extremely popular. He didn't want any job at all in the government, which is an interesting thing, because also the spiritual side of his activity was very tremendously important to him, of course. The last years, the last decade of Gandhi's life, and again, of course, this is extremely rapid overview, because, you know, I could do 10 hours just on Gandhi, but, you know, that's not what I'm paid for. 1942, then the Quit India movement, so a stronger movement for independence. All of the Congress leaders are arrested, including Gandhi. However, the Second World War changes the situation, and I need to study this more in detail, because I'm not quite sure why, but it seems that the British understand that they cannot keep India. Now, this is partly because after the Second World War, Britain is pretty exhausted. I think the Second World War costs 30% of all the national wealth of Britain, you know, everything they own. And I think there's an understanding that they need to... Also, the Second World War shows that the Americans are the important country. So I suspect that the British elite began to understand they couldn't hold India. They didn't move out of India because they considered colonialism to be immoral. So in June 1947, then the Parliament in London passes the Indian Independence Act. There is also a tremendously terrible conflict going on between Hindu politicians and Muslim politicians and masses of people, where the Gandhi and some others say, we don't want India to be divided. And the Muslim League defends the idea of having a separate state for Pakistan, because there are many, many Muslims who do not believe that they will be well treated in an independent India, which is of whom the vast majority are Hindus. This is not just an argument. There are big fights, riots and pogroms, and thousands of people are killed. Nevertheless, at this point, it's getting quite hot for the British. This is the last Viceroy, Lord Mountbatten. And the British think this is just going to explode. We need to leave quickly. And so they decided to leave very, very quickly. They agree to the division of India and Pakistan. And it's an incredible story, because the problem is, where is the border? There is no border before between India and Pakistan. They don't exist, yeah? So somebody has to draw the border. And it is drawn by a British civil servant, I'm not an expert, okay, an expert. But it's kept secret. And so you have this incredibly surrealist situation where the Queen... Does the Queen actually go? I think she does. Yeah, that they, in any case, they have the big celebrations for the independence of India one day. And the following day, they have the big celebrations for the independence of Pakistan. And nobody except this civil servant in London knows where the border is. They refuse to tell about the border until later. Unfortunately, of course, the border involves dividing towns which are disputed. And there will be absolutely enormous, not quite a civil war, but almost hundreds of thousands of people are killed when millions of Muslims move north to get out of India into the new Pakistan, and hundreds of thousands of Hindus move south to leave Pakistan and get to other areas. And the whole situation is tremendous mess, and there remain a number of regions which were disputed between India and Pakistan. In fact, even today, there are regions which are disputed between India and Pakistan, and there have been four wars between India and Pakistan since 1947. So it was all... I'm not really an expert on this, but certainly dividing Hindus from Muslims was an important part of British strategy for 100 years beforehand, so they can't be considered to be completely innocent. Gandhi will have some success reducing Hindu-Muslim violence, but as I say, there were hundreds of thousands of people killed, so it's an enormous thing. And regularly over the last 60 years, there are big fights between Muslims and Hindus in particular parts of the country. And in January 1948, Gandhi is assassinated by a Hindu who believes that he is being too soft on the Muslims. Okay. As you can imagine, the funeral is absolutely ginormous. This is partly also because Gandhi refused to have sophisticated security. He said, no, I don't want security, you know. Yeah, it's better to be Gandhi. He's a pretty impressive guy, really. I don't have many friends like him. He's become, of course, a symbol around the world. This is a statue of him in New York. He's become a symbol, but also I think he's often been a symbol of pacifism and not necessarily of non-violent action. But there you go, that's life. When you die, they can do what they like with your ideas. You can't really say much about it. There's another one there, statue of Gandhi. I don't know if there's a statue of Gandhi in France. There probably is somewhere. Somewhere, but it's true. You get street names after Martin Luther King in France, but not after Gandhi. I don't think La Rue Gandhi, l'école Gandhi, le collège Gandhi, peut-être. So where? That's good for Real. I must go there sometime. Good. Oh, there you go. So you get the terrible thing about being a history teacher is now that your students can check what you're saying while you're saying it. It's terrifying. 1947, then end of British rule and partition of some continent into mainly Hindu in India and Muslim majority state of Pakistan. And this gives rise to this, the Times of India. So you can see how close the Indian elite culture was to London. They used the same name for their newspaper, the Times, yeah, the Times of India. Birth of India's freedom. Nation wakes to new life. Mr. Nehru calls for big effort from people. Lord Mountbatten greets Pakistan. Lord Mountbatten was the last viceroy, Lavisawa, he was the last viceroy, and the first one to invite Indians to dinner. There was recently a film called Ledangi Visawa, the last viceroy, which is okay. I mean, you do learn some stuff from it, yeah. And as you can imagine, they were pretty happy. You know, pretty pleased about this. So Indian independence. Then the 15th of August 1947. Now, when India became independent, it remained a dominion. That is to say, it took on the same status as Canada. That Canada was not was in the 20th century was no longer a colony. They had the same queen, but she didn't do much to trouble them. In fact, that's still the case today. Of course, the queen is still the queen of Australia, and in fact, Thingy and Thingy are in Australia now, going around. Apparently, they're going to have a baby. Amazing. However, just 3 years later, Republic. India becomes a republic. That is to say that they no longer have the queen. Now, the king. The queen is 53. So they no longer have the king. Obviously, an important symbolic move. But also, they reorganized the Commonwealth. The British elite were understanding that the British Empire was on its way out. And so they had this new idea. They said, let's organize the Commonwealth, which is an international organization of ex-British colonies and Britain, which has been quite an interesting reaction, quite an interesting tactic to maintain influence when the empire is dying. Okay. So what did they do? First of all, originally it was the British Commonwealth. And then later they changed the name to the Commonwealth. Because the constitution of the Commonwealth, all countries are equal. Now, this is relatively untrue, yeah. But in theory, yeah, all countries are equal, and Britain is just one country in the Commonwealth, along with, you know, Kenya and India and a lot. 50, 60 Commonwealth countries, something like that. And this is an important source of soft power, British soft power even today. The Commonwealth Games, it's like a mini Olympic Games, about showing how important and what good relations Britain has with these countries. I'm not an expert on this, but I think it was, from an economic point of view, quite an intelligent tactic on the part of the British elite. So they continued having the Indian elite sending their children to Oxford and Cambridge. That's still the case today. And the Kenyan elite, this is important. I mean, it's not important to me. It's important to the British elite to maintain British influence and trade. That if the leaders of a country have gone to university in your country, that's not nothing. That's something quite important about links. So all that goes on. In any case, there you get to the Republic, and I only have a few dates to look at from then on. This is tremendously rapid, but themes in Indian history since the Republic. First of all, there have regularly been wars with Pakistan. The first war with Pakistan was in 48, then 65, and there was another one in the 70s and another one in the 1990s. So there's quite a lot of wars. One of these, I can't actually remember which one, resulted in the creation of Bangladesh. Bangladesh was created in 47 as East Pakistan. That is to say that Pakistan, incredible idea in the modern world, had two different parts, one over there and one over there. And it's a long way and the trains were not very fast, yeah? And this, for reasons from your point of view, it's like that. This, for reasons which I'm not an expert on at all, did not last, and so Bangladesh came into existence, I think, in the 1970s. And obviously Pakistan not too happy about that. The second thing is the tremendous influence of the Congress Party. The Congress Party has been in power then out of power. It's a bit like the Labour Party, in government, out of government, in government, out of government. And they represented, in many ways, a social democratic sort of option. Nationalisations, quite a lot of nationalisation, quite a lot of central organisation of the economy. A certain link with that kind of demand, and they will be led by Indira Gandhi. Despite her name, she is not related to Mohandas Gandhi. She is in fact the daughter of Nehru, and this was something which many commentators were rather sceptical about. It, the same family produced the prime ministers. Yeah, sounds like you're in America. Yeah. You know, President Bush Senior, President Bush Junior, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton. It was like that. I think it's probably fair to say also, though, that there was a big problem of corruption in India. I mean, a big problem of corruption, more than we have corruption in France, but it was much more every day. It took quite a long time to reorganize the Republic, because when the British left, there were 500 small princedoms. Of course, princely states, they called them, and one by one they were, well, not one by one, but they were integrated into the Indian into the Indian Republic, and then Goa, which was a Portuguese colony, was annexed by India, and so on. So they managed to produce something, and then the other theme is India becoming a superpower. And for reasons which I don't fully understand, if you want to be a superpower, you need to have a nuclear weapon. I've never been a superpower, so I can't say exactly why this is. But certainly, if you look at the United Nations, perhaps you know, on the United Nations Security Council, there are many members, but five of the members are permanent. There are five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council: America, Russia, Britain, France, and China. Yes, that's right. And these are the five countries with major nuclear weapons things. It's not, you know, so it's not an accident. They don't do nuclear weapons tests for nothing. It does have an influence on international power politics. So those are some of the things going on. There's also been, I mean, India is a big place. It's a big subcontinent, but also it is rather unfortunate from other points of view. There have been very major earthquakes and floods, I mean, you know, with thousands of people killed. Now, this is not just because there are earthquakes, this is also because in a poor country with a poor city, the buildings are not stable. So in Japan, when you have an earthquake, you have two people killed. And the same earthquake in India, you can have thousands killed because the buildings are not the same. So a couple of things from the 80s. Enormous crisis between Sikhs in one part of India, because once the Muslim League had successfully lobbied to establishing the Muslim state of Pakistan, in one part of India there were Sikhs who said, "Yeah, well, we want a Sikh state in our part of India." You see, and this was the cause of terrible conflict and pogroms and so on. And in 1984, the Sikh independence movement or autonomy movement was occupying the Golden Temple, which I showed you a little earlier on, as an organizing center. And the government sent in the troops, and many, many people were killed. Interestingly, I don't know who writes the Wikipedia article, but they said many, many people were accidentally killed in the Wikipedia article. But, you know, it's, you don't want to trust too much this. And this was a tremendous national crisis. And in this situation, the Indira Gandhi, who was the Prime Minister, was actually asked if she wanted to have only Hindu bodyguards, and she said, no, I've had Sikh bodyguards for a long time and everything will be fine. But in fact, she was murdered by her own bodyguards, not by somebody pretending to be her bodyguards, but for somebody who'd worked for her for years. That is to say that the military attack on the most sacred temple was too much. She was assassinated. 30 years later, this is the commemoration of the attack on the Golden Temple, and there are still investigations going on. There are still things that people don't understand about the 1984 attack, but it was a big deal. And there is Indira Gandhi. So also interesting, because we had a woman leader in India before. We had one in France, although we always consider India to be a traditional place. There's the newspaper, Indira Gandhi shot dead. And this is a memorial at the place where she was assassinated. There was also another terrible thing the same year, which was Union Carbide. In fact, Union Carbide is one of the most famous ecological catastrophes in the world. Thousands of people were killed when Union Carbide pesticides plant, this is an American factory in India producing pesticides, and it had a leak. I don't remember the details, but these are just some of the important and striking events that we've seen in recent years. Just three from the 1990s, and then I'm going to stop and do something else. Rajiv Gandhi was also assassinated, so you get a attrition here, by a female suicide bomber, sympathetic to an independence movement. So you've still got quite a lot of outstanding problems with autonomy and so on, and also interreligious violence. And 1992, one of the most famous events, where Hindu extremists, they demolished a mosque. Now, as you know, in general, people don't like you demolishing their religious buildings. Not the best way to build peace, yeah. As I say, I don't want to exaggerate these incidents too much, because there are a billion people in India. So if there is a terrible riot and conflict in a town with 4 million people, it's important, but it doesn't mean that this is what happens every time you go to India. Oh, look, there's a bombing. It's just an absolutely enormous place. Okay, well, I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to show you probably about 20 minutes of this film. Now, this is a film which is just a few years old, but the reason I liked it is that I thought that it showed some things about life for fairly ordinary people in India, educated people, but fairly ordinary educated people. About 20 minutes.
Hello, I'm calling about my last statement that I bought.
Well, is that hers? Yeah. Have you
given me a camera without sweeping my bag? I'd like to see if I can increase your credit on my American Express card. Yes. May I have your credit card number?
Sir, Pennsylvania?
Okay, thank you for being a customer. I want to ask you.
In this era of globalization, it's common for customer queries to be rerouted to India and answered by someone pretending to be your local service provider.
Thank you so much for verifying that. Mr. Jones, how can I help
you? To converse with overseas customers, Indians have adopted anglicized names and pretend accents.